think race, class, and gender have divided us so much that we don't see it. And behind the social construct, we are human. We're messy. We're brilliant. We are love. We are born curious. We're born wanting relationship. And somewhere along the way, we get robbed of our basic humanity and our humanness. So I think what we're needing to do now is to say, what happens if we give it back to ourselves and to each other? What's possible then?
Hey everyone, it's Hilde, and this is the Creating the Future podcast. I'm glad you've joined us here today. This is a place for us to explore what really creates social change. Beyond the assumption that change is slow and incremental, what creates the kind of transformational change that we can see and feel? That is the question driving this podcast. What will actually create the healthy, joyful future we all want to live in? I'm delighted to have Cherie Tang join me on the podcast today. For over 35 years, Cherie has been a frontline organizer, a capacity builder, a grant maker, and a coach. As a champion for social and racial justice, Cherie's work all focuses on the power of love as the catalyst for our collective freedom. When I talk with Cherie, I come back to one of the three core principles of catalytic thinking, that no matter what happens or what will happen, it's always about the people. And so it is my joy to welcome Cherie today. Welcome, Cherie, to the podcast for Creating the Future. It is just delightful to see you. I've been looking so forward to this conversation. How are you doing today?
Thanks for the invitation, Hilde. I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Cherie, could you tell a little bit about your story? I read your bio in the intro to this, but if you could just tell a little bit about what brought you to the work that you're doing today and what excites you about that?
Hilde, thank you. We are always people that stand on other people's shoulders, and I'm no different. I was born a colonized person in my own mother island of Hong Kong. I was born a British subject. So the recent passing of Queen Elizabeth brings back a lot of very complex feelings for me. As I was growing up, I never saw myself in her, right? Porcelain skin, white queen, a signal of power everywhere. So I was a very confused growing up. And now with words and in retrospect, every time I saw Queen Elizabeth's face, I saw self-hatred. So that's how I grew up. And then we immigrated to this country when I was 11 years old, not speaking a word of English. And I've had a very, I would say, storied journey in my 65 years. I turned 65 in April this year.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And I feel very proud of where I have landed in terms of my self-respect, my self-healing, and the work for social and racial justice that I have devoted my entire life to. I began as a community organizer when I was 17. So more recently in my journey, I would say what brought me to this measuring love work is a question that Sammy Nunez threw to me at Brothers and Sisters at the Capitol in Sacramento, where I was feeling some sort of way about myself. I was introducing myself to Sammy. I would just come on board as the learning evaluation partner for a major California-based funder. And Sammy looked at me with his cohort of young brown men behind him. He said to me, "Cherie, how do you measure love? Because that's what we're doing out here." And then, Hilde, that question sat in my heart for 5 years. I had to answer the question, but I didn't know how. So finally brought together a team of beloveds to really put some words to this idea of measuring love. In the social sector, if we're not about love, what are we about, really? Is it sure not about the money? and it's sure not about the prestige, right? So in a capitalist society, I think that has been a very important question for me, for my soul, for my recovery, for my own healing, and for the collective rise of people like me and the people that I've devoted my life to. I feel like it's a very important question.
If any of you listening would like to see the most succinct, fascinating, energizing description, we all put our little tagline on LinkedIn. Cherie's tagline says, radical love, courageous strategy. And it is just so energizing just to see that stated. Isn't it amazing that that's the thing that we all need and it's the stuff we never talk about?
I think that's why we are in the place that we are, Hildy, as a society, as a people, as oppressed people, as women. There's just so much, right, going on that tells us to not love ourselves. We need anti-aging this. We need anti-aging that. We need youth serums here and there. We need all the self-soothing that we can buy. That is just so artificial. And just shuffling more capitalist shit in our faces. We don't need that. What we need is healthy inside so that we can love ourselves and love each other with respect, with boundaries, with joy, with imagination, right? We need all the things that the society has really robbed from us to reduce us to next to nothing so that they can pump all this stuff into us thinking we need to buy everything so that we can feel whole again. But we were whole when we were born. So it's really a returning to ourselves, right? That's what this journey is really about for me.
Absolutely. Wow. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, you are leading me in directly into the question that I wanted to chat with you about today, which is you have been an activist for over 20 years. Probably a lot longer than that if you started at 17. When you see change actually happening, what do you see as the factors that are undergirding that change? What do you see as the factors that lead to change?
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you putting a plural on the factor, right? It's factors. It's never one thing or two things or even three things, right? I think people are... human are complex and we are infinitely messy. So when I see a group of people making change, right, it's about the people. The people are making change. So what's happening to the people over the years I've observed are some very fundamental things, but things that are not easy. They may be simple, but they're not easy. So I would put it on four levels. On the first level is myself and courage. I think without courage, there is nothing else. There is nothing else that is possible, that is worth getting up about and dancing to the moon about, right? Without courage, there is nothing. And what courage does is I think it brings us individually, brings us a sense of safety. Nobody can give me safety. I have to fight for my own safety. So that takes courage, right? It takes trust in ourselves that we can handle whatever it is that comes our way. So I think that's number one. So then when you bring a whole bunch of people together who are on various places on their journeys of self-healing and courage, what I see is that there's a process of purification and cleansing that's happening through dialogue. Purification and cleansing, the purification and the cleansing process is invisible to outer eyes, right? What's happening inside is I am really demanding that I am in integrity with who I say I am. When Hildy, when you're not looking, when my clients are not looking, when my husband is not looking, who am I? What am I doing? What am I saying to myself? What am I saying to other people? That's love in integrity with who I say I am. That's what I call radical love for the self. It is different from self-love. Capitalist marketing has cornered self-love, right? When I say the word self-love in an audience, what are people thinking about? They're thinking about, oh, I'm going to go get a massage. I'm going to go have a glass of wine at 4:30 or whatever. I'm going to go get a fingernail polish. I'm not talking about self-soothing. I'm talking about kind of radical love for the self that is demanding, that is tough, that is hard to do, I would say. It's challenging because we really have to see ourselves honestly. So that is the second layer of what's happening. The third layer is we are now digesting in community. We have a group of people, right? We are revisiting pain and hurt that we have caused each other. We are voicing our appreciates and gratitude for each other. We are handling our conflict because we believe when we conflict, it's because we care. And in that moment of caring, we have to lean into each other and not shy away from conflict like it's some bad thing in the closet that just come out. No, conflict is here all the time, whether we admit it or not, and whether we handle it or not, it's there, right? So we have to pivot from conflict being a divisive thing to conflict among values aligned people as an opportunity to engage and engage deeper. And in handling conflict, one of the things I've learned from Sammy is before I can point my finger and judge, the finger has to be turned to me and say, what are some of the worst things I've ever done? What are some of the boundaries I have trespassed? Like in Sean Ginwright's book, Four Pivots, the pivot is from looking outward, right, with a lens, to looking inward with a mirror. That is the hardest thing I have ever done. And I would say that is some of the things that is worth doing if we're about living and thriving in community. And the last thing in that digestion is composting shame. Shame comes from hiding the worst things we have ever done in closets, in the dark, where there is no healing. There's no nothing in there. There's no air. There's no touch. There's no tenderness. There's no love. There's no compassion in darkness, you know, hiding our shame. So how do we forgive ourselves in a way that is composting, right? Like there's trash and there's trash. But there are other things that we've put in the trash pile that actually needs to be examined, given a new life, like made lemonade. And we need to sort them through. What is one piece of trash in your life right now, dear Hildy, dear listener, that would really serve you if you took it out, examined it with love and compassion, and gave it its proper future life? So those are the things in what I would call digesting, right? Wow. We're digesting all the time with ourselves inside, with other people, and in community. Sure. And then I will say the last part in movement building, in building power. How many of us, I've been astonished when I ask you people, like hundreds of people in audiences, how many of you own your power? I might say 2 or 3 hands up in a room of 100. We're all about fighting for power for other people. But when it comes to our own power, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, no, no. I got none. I don't want none. Don't look over here. And to me, we are just leaving power on the table when we do that. We each have power. Like owning my own story of being a colonized person at birth, that's part of my power. I have to grab it and put it back where it belongs, which is in me. So when we are together, owning our power, honoring each other's power, and making power happen for the causes we believe in, that is what's happening when I am in communities where change is happening. Wow. It's having conversations like these, Hildy, that we reach into our own hearts and each other's hearts and move along the path that we are on to more power, to more equity, to more justice and freedom. Like, I feel more free today than I have ever felt. And I want that. I want that for you. I want that for me. I want that for all the people that we are fighting for and fighting with, right? It's power to the people, and it's power for the people.
And from the people.
There's no other way.
And from the people.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, you're reminding me, years ago, I saw a quote by Oprah, and I know I'm going to mess this up, but the gist of it was, people keep asking me, who the hell do you think you are? And the answer is, I'm me. As a kid, though, the stay in your place kind of stuff of we are taught over and over. Years ago, one of the books that I wrote is called The Pollyanna Principles. And the reason I called it The Pollyanna Principles is I got so tired of defending myself of you're just a Pollyanna that I said, I'm going to claim it. I'm going to say, yeah, you want to see a Pollyanna? Here you go. And so I'm very, yes, very deeply resonating with you talking about stepping into our power. That whole meme of we're the ones we've been waiting for.
Exactly.
And we are conditioned to believe we have no power. We're conditioned from the time we're kids. Our parents tell us we're in charge, you're not. But our society tells us we have no power. And it is very helpful for the people in power to tell us that we have no power. I'm really, you know, I could spend, you and I are going to have to do this again, because I could spend an hour talking about each of the things that you talked about.
Yes.
Do you have any stories that you can share where you have seen love in action, in movements, in change? What does that actually look like when you've seen it?
I see it every day, actually. Because I'm looking for it and I expect it. I spent an incredible 3 days recently with a group of Indigenous femme identified gender expansive folk who are in the Indigenous reproductive justice movement. That body sovereignty comes out of tribal and people sovereignty. And I saw some incredible forgiving and mending and holding people responsible for their healing. I saw tremendous compassion that the role of alcoholism has played in tribal communities and families, right? And I saw the forgiveness and the understanding and the compassion. So the repair for the pain that alcohol has induced in the waking body. I see it in play with groups that I'm working with on clarifying who they are in the world. The love that they have for their purpose. Right, why they exist. Even though some of the founders who are older than me are still holding on to their executive positions, I see it from a place of love. And I also see it from a place where they cannot retire. They can't afford it. They have not prepared for it. They don't know what other life they will have beyond it. So I see they're human. Right, in the pain and the healing. I work with a group in Oregon. They have a 40-member development team just to raise money.
Wow.
They decided 4 years ago, under some very gutsy and compassionate leadership, that they were no longer going to use money as the measure of their success. In place, they were pivoting it to love. I was like, wow. I mean, talk about mega shift in a large scale, right?
Huge.
And 4 years later, they are a team with less turnover, right? If we know the fundraising field, it's like a revolving door, especially for women who face a lot of sexual harassment from donors. This has come to a halt. They are raising more money than they've ever raised. They have more small donors than they've ever had. They have more donors calling this organization their political home than they've ever had. It's been an incredible journey of looking at how do we love ourselves? How do we love each other? How do we not use the cloak of professionalism to oppress us? So we broke down what professionalism has meant for them. And they have pivoted to a professional frame. I mean, I'm just like loving on these folk like never before. Yeah, that's what it takes.
I'm always shocked. I'm always sort of appalled by the fact that because nonprofits in general, certainly social enterprises, are patterned after businesses, that the only reports that are routinely looked at every single month have to do with money. And money is not our goal. Money is one of many means to the ends of our goal. And yet that's the report that we look at. And so what we measure is what we value, is what we hold ourselves accountable for. And I'm really fascinated by that turn of looking at it through the lens of love and connection and relationship. And let's see a profit and loss statement of how many friends did you make this month? How many relationships did you build this month? Now we're talking about something we can actually use.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's striking me that we see examples of love all the time and we don't call it that.
Yep.
As you're talking, I'm realizing, well, I've seen that. And we just are so routinely taught not, you know, that's squishy. That's touchy-feely. We're not going to call it that. Can't we call it client relationships, or can't we, you know, put something that we can put on a budget? Again, it comes back to money. How will we put love on a balance sheet? Why are you looking at the balance sheet in the first place?
Yeah.
It is just fascinating.
In this society, Kelby, you reminded me that popular culture, like Hollywood, music, all the pop music, pop 40 or whatever, and the church have cornered love. They talk about love. Jesus loves me. My man loves me. Oh, my woman left me, I got the blues. Yeah. But in our sector, you're absolutely right. We are so paranoid about using the word love and leading with love. When love is the antidote to domination, right, bell hooks. Mm. Love is the antidote to colonization. Colonizers told us, you are nothing. We're going to treat you like an insect, like a dog, like a monkey, to justify our exploitation of you, right? So love is something we must reclaim for ourselves. And when we don't love ourselves, who benefits?
And to see it again as love. To see it as love and not to see it as a strategy, although I'm very curious about how you incorporate love into strategy. So I definitely want to talk about that. But you know, we are so taught to think about it again in business terms. We spent a long part of our early consulting days way, way back in the early 90s doing a lot of strength-based, community-based economic development in Native American tribal settings and non-gaming, just community-based. And one of the things that we learned very, very quickly, first of all, we learned that we had no preconceived notions. So the only thing we knew to do was to listen to people and build on what the people had. We didn't realize that was a thing. It was just what felt right to the two of us. And one of the things we quickly learned is you cannot take your outside perceptions about something like alcoholism, as you were talking about before, in a tribal setting. You cannot take your outside perspectives into Indian country and say, well, if they show up drunk for work, then you fire them. No, no. If the whole ethos of the community is to build community, and we know that alcoholism is a problem, we want to help Joe. We don't want to fire Joe and make his life worse. We want to help Joe. And that made just such an impression on me. What did we see it as? Because we were trained to look through the eyes of business. We saw it as a smart business decision within the setting of what made sense in that community. What you have me thinking about now is, no, what we were watching was love. And so there's so many of those things that we see all the time that we don't recognize at its purest form is just love in action.
And so I think race, class, and gender have divided us so much that we don't see it. That when it's like in our face, we don't see it.
Yeah.
And under, you know, behind the racial falsities, right? The social constructs, we are human. We're messy. We're brilliant. We are love. We are born curious. We're born pure. We're born wanting relationship.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And somewhere along the way, we get robbed of our basic humanity and our humanness. So I think what we're needing to do now is to put it back to say, this is what we've been missing, right? This is what's been robbed of us. What happens if we give it back to ourselves and to each other, right? What's possible then?
So what does that look like in strategy work? I know you do a lot of strategy work. What does that look like in strategy work?
So what it looks like is often just how it's done, right? I am a big believer that no good result is going to come out of a crappy process. So
Amen.
We've got to pay attention.
Absolutely.
So we've got to pay attention, right, to process. And what is process? Process between people is holding a container for humans to be themselves so that they can bring their best selves, because you will love them through their worst selves, right? So the process itself has to be a container that's filled with love and trust and cleansing and intuition and music and dance and joy and laughter and just being human together. That if we can provide that kind of process where people can feel respected, feel loved, anything is possible. That's what I believe. And that's as a consultant for 25 years, I never came into the organizing work thinking, oh yeah, one day I'm gonna, you know, turn all this into a consulting career. Never dreamed it. And here I am. And I have to keep doing what I know, which is to love our people and to be a Pollyanna, that I'm gonna be hopeful. I don't care. I don't care what capitalism is feeding me today and tomorrow. I choose to be hopeful. Now, do I have blinders on? I hope not, right? So my Pollyanna is informed Pollyanna, but I choose to be hopeful. I choose to not be jaded. Somebody told me a long time ago, oh, she's seasoned, but not jaded. And I was thinking, oh, I like that. I like that. I don't want to be jaded. Why would I want to be jaded? What fun would it be to get up every day if I already knew what was going to happen?
Yeah. I know I brought up the phrase Pollyanna. You've got me now thinking about it again. We have this image that it's only realistic to be pessimistic, that to be optimistic is not realistic. And the thing that I've realized about that is that when we're pessimistic, we're only seeing this much of the world. And that when we open our eyes to everything on both sides, what that includes is our possibilities and our potential, because those are real also. So unless something is, you know, is physically impossible, Unless something is physically impossible, it is possible. And to exclude that possibility from the way we see the world and to say that this is realistic, but all that possibility that absolutely exists is not realistic, is just fooling ourselves.
And it's oppression at work. It's systematic oppression at work. Why our leaders are burned out and no good for nothing. That is bad for the movement. That is just not healthy. And who's doing that to us? The oppressor voice in us is doing that. You're not enough. You're not enough. Work harder, 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 more, 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 more. Be realistic. Yeah. All those voices are not ours.
Yeah.
Right. So that get real admonishment, that voice that tells us, who you think you are to dream so big? Be realistic. That voice, to me, is my colonizer's voice. That voice is the voice that wants me stay down, stay tucked under, stay quiet, silent. I refuse to be that. And I think there are enough people refusing to be that, right? It's how we continue to lift each other up, how we continue to find each other in the darkness so that we can be expansive together and feel we have a right to be.
Yeah. Such a big part of that is, again, the get real, the be realistic of what we aim to accomplish. I always use a food bank as an example because they're so easy. We feed people. And yes, people need food, but we're never going to achieve the world that we actually want to live in if all we do is focus right here on that reactive piece, which is the get real piece. And we're told that anything bigger than that is blue sky thinking and that we need to focus on what's real and what's right in front of us. And without the acknowledgement that we can see both, we can do both at the same time. We can take this step of healing that must happen because we can't achieve an equitable, humane, healthy community if we don't heal. But if all we do is aim at healing, we never give ourselves the joy of aiming for what's possible.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's why the healing industry is fraught because you can't buy enough products ever to heal. It's like we can't fundraise our way out of poverty. We can't fundraise our way out of criminal injustice system. So yeah, we got to keep our horizon, right? Much, much bigger than what I think the system wants us and allow us, right? Would rather us keep focused on. So yeah, I love talking about that with you.
Mm-hmm. It's my favorite place. It's one of the things that I love about the work that both you and I do. I am frequently told, and I'm going to bet that you are as well, that CEOs and executive directors frequently tell me that once they've spoken to us, they feel like they're finally lifting their face up and seeing that they're so used to just looking at their desk and looking at what's right in front of them, that just the encouragement to look up just lets you go, oh, okay, yeah, that's the context. This is the ecosystem I'm working in. This is the context of why I'm doing what I'm doing. And you're reminding me so much that we lose that context of why. And why is all about building a loving community. We lose that context of why because the day-to-day is so filled with the how and the what. And I've got to get that report out and I've got to get this thing done. And then there's, speaking of conflict, there's conflict going on over there. We get lost in that. If we don't keep to ourselves a practice every day of just looking up at that context of why are we doing the work we're doing? It is to build relationship and participation and agency in community, which is I love using the word love for that.
Yes. Yes. And this love, right, that we're talking about is demanding. Mm-hmm. It is tough as it is tender. It is not just marshmallows and kittens.
It's how we parent our children, recognizing
exactly. And when they do something we don't like, it's like, I don't have to love all parts of you. I mean, you know, I can also love you with understanding of why you did certain things, right? And the question is, what happened to you? Not what's wrong with you, right? So you're reaching for a deeper level of understanding for ourselves and for each other.
Yeah. And there's so much patriarchal stuff in that, because love is mushy. Love is girly. We're talking about that's the female side. We don't value
yes.
That's soft skills, but the hard right. skills are the ones that we value. And there has to be that connection, because when things go wrong, it's because there wasn't connection. It wasn't because you had the best computers that everything worked. It wasn't because you had more money that everything worked. It worked because you had trust, you had integrity,
right.
you had values, you had love.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well said.
I am so deeply grateful that we got to spend this time together. And I seriously could go into all the other points with you. And I hope that sometime soon that you will come back and we'll continue this conversation, because this has been just delightful.
Thank you so much, Hildy. I look forward to that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sheree. I'm so grateful to Sheree for sharing her perspective with us. We are so conditioned to condemn words like love. We're encouraged to use words like effectiveness or professionalism or efficiency. But we are human animals with human brains that are wired for connection. Sheree doesn't just encourage us to get back to that. She recognizes that when we focus on love and connection, we're actually engaging our superpower to make stuff happen. As Sheree makes clear, focusing on love doesn't mean being soft and mushy. Thinking and acting through a lens of love requires courage, integrity, and tough decision-making. To help with that, Sheree has shared some wonderful deep dive papers that provide examples of what love can look like in action. We've added those to the description page for this podcast. And while you're at that podcast page, if this episode got you thinking, we hope you will subscribe. Our guests are guaranteed to get your creative social change juices flowing. And in times like these, we need all the energy and inspiration we can get. Thank you for being with us today and for wanting to create a better future for our world. We'll see you next time here at Creating the Future.